So the brain knows what to save and what not to save.
But suppose your brain is saving thoughts and memories that you don't want saved. Is there a way to banish those unwanted intruders from your mind? It's a midget in weight, but a giant in influence. The 3 pounds of brain, along with its affiliated nervous system, controls everything your body does. Let's learn more about it on today's Truth in the Test Tube. After a distinguished career as professor of physiology, Dr. Charles L. Weber recently retired from Loyola University in suburban Chicago. Shortly before retiring, Dr. Weber spoke with program producer David Fisher.
What's interesting, when you look through the history of neuroscience, they say, well, the brain is like a telephone system. Okay. Then it was, well, the brain is like a computer. The brain is like a hologram. So in other words, as we learn more and more things about physical sciences, we attribute this attribute to the brain. So the brain, I've concluded, is much more than all of those things. That's why it's important to study, because it's so remarkable.
Now, can you deliberately build certain connections you want? Let's say that there are certain thoughts that are well connected now that you want to replace with something that you know would be better for you to think.
Yes.
There's an old hymn, for example, that says, each victory will help you some other to win.
Yes.
So is it true that if you deliberately think a good thought, perhaps a verse of the Bible, and repeat it, and repeat it, and repeat it, that becomes a well-traveled path, a stronger connection?
The answer to that's yes. The opposite of that is, if you don't use it, you lose it. In terms of neurons that talk to each other across synapses, the more you use a neural pathway, the stronger that synaptic connection becomes. And by stronger, I mean more connections. You can actually grow additional extensions to the neuron. So the dendrites can be richer dendritic tree, which can then connect more strongly. That's true. So in other words, when you use a pathway many times, it casts it to what we can say is like a memory. Now, if you want to talk about memory, we can talk about short-term memory and long-term memory. So if I ask you to memorize 10 numbers at random, you'll be able to do that. But if I ask you an hour from now, you probably won't even remember because it doesn't have a context. One theory of long-term memory is, number one, it's distributed over different brain regions. It's not just in one region. And number two, it's written down in proteins.
So are you saying you have a backup memory, not just one part?
Yes, it's almost like a hologram. In other words, if you remove part of the brain, you won't remove all your memory. You can actually reproduce a memory from a small part of the brain, which is kind of interesting. So it's distributed. In other words, you didn't put all your eggs in one basket. So again, it just speaks how marvelously that we're designed. What you can do in a child with severe epilepsy, a surgeon can remove one half of the entire child's brain. And that child can grow, and you won't be able to tell that they're abnormal. A half a brain does not grow back. What it does is it assumes the functions that are lacking from the other side.
So it's going to take at least $100 million to research the rest of the brain's activities.
For example, what's consciousness? How do you define consciousness? You know, we say, well, you're semi-conscious. What that means is that when we ask a patient a question, they kind of get a garbled answer. If they're unconscious, we ask them a question and there's no response. Or they can be so unconscious that you put a pin in their foot and there's no response. And they're like an alcoholic or something like that. They're so anesthetized by their drug, there's no response. But we don't understand what consciousness is. One theory is, well, consciousness comes out by the sheer number of neurons. So is an ant conscious? Well, ants are pretty smart, the way they work in community and the way they build things. But we say they're like pre-programmed, and they're guided by chemical trails and things like that. But are they conscious? Does an ant say, I think, therefore I am? Do ants think? Well, how about your dog? You say, well, yeah, my dog thinks. Well, okay, well, what's the difference between an ant and a dog? They say, well, there's a lot of difference between an ant and a dog. Number one being, it's got a much, much bigger brain. So can a dog be depressed? Yes, a dog can be depressed. Can a dog feel sorrow? Can a dog feel joy? Can a dog get even with you because you left him at home when you went on vacation? Dogs are pretty intelligent. But is that a sheer fact of the number of neurons? Is a dog self-conscious? Does a dog say, I bark, therefore I am? We can't crawl inside the head of somebody else. How do I know you're conscious? All I can do is I can tell by the fact that you respond and can talk and mentate, but I can't get inside your head.
What would you say is the most remarkable part about the brain?
The most remarkable part about the brain is it's like Abraham, go out and count, how many stars are there? How do we know there's 100 billion neurons? Did somebody count them? See, they're just estimates. We just have no clue, let alone how they're hooked together. So what's so impressive about the brain is the functional unit of the brain is the neuron. There's so many of them. They're all connected together. And when you have a healthy body, they synchronize and they do gross functions. What's neat in the field of robotics is that you can put arrays of electrode on the brain, even on the outside of the brain, on the skull, and people can think certain actions, and that can be sensed by the computers, and then the computer can move an artificial limb.
What level of electrical voltage is there?
Well, neurons are working in millivolts.
I've heard 70 millivolts.
At a resting state, the charge across a membrane is minus 70 millivolts. When it gets activated, it goes to plus 20. That's a swing of 90 millivolts. Milli is 1/1000th of a volt.
Right.
Very, very small. But if you can get an electric shock, if you touch an electric fence, you're going to jump. So the body responds to those types of electrical stimuli. If you get hit by lightning, these are electrical events that interact with the body.
How did the brain get so smart?
How did the brain get so smart? What does it mean to be smart? I suppose being smart means knowing how to live in your environment in a way which is conducive to continuing to live in the environment. In other words, avoid the predators, get your own food, communicate with like kind. How did the brain get so smart? Well, in a sense, I believe the brain of a child, there's a certain amount of functionality in that brain. It's not totally blank, but that young child can learn by the environment, and by parents, and by interactions in those early years, because you can still form strong brain connections. So the early years are critical. But how did it get so smart? We have to say, well, this is a divine miracle in the sense of how smart it is. It's smart just by the sheer number of neurons which are connected together in a proper order.
One noted atheist made a comment. Richard Dawkins said if there were a God, he would have to have been a mega mind.
Well, I like that definition. God certainly is a mega mind, multidimensional, high thinking, high mentality, so high that God says, you know what? My ways are so high, they're higher than your ways. In Psalm 50, the error of your ways, thinking that I was just like you. We are not just like God. God is ineffable. God is otherworldly. God is transcendent. And for us to arrogantly say, God is not there, is the problem of, well, you haven't discovered him yet. The absence of evidence is not evidence for absence.
Another thought that comes to mind talks about the foolishness of God being wiser than man. If there is such a thing as God's foolishness, it's several levels above our wisest thought.
I think foolishness is a relative term. If God has a foolishness, and as the scriptures say, it's wiser than any man, maybe it says that God has wisdoms of different degree, or some things are deeper than other things, and the things which are not so deep to God, we say, well, those are just foolish. Foolish things to us would be simple things that maybe we've learned as a child. We say, well, that's the ABCs, okay? Not that it's foolish, but that it's simple. We got that cold.
And we've developed beyond that.
Right, and we're way beyond that. So in a sense, maybe it means that God is, some things are more complicated than others. But even the simplest of things to God is super complicated for us, okay. Which means our best intentions and trying to learn about the world in which we live are just pictures and patterns of what reality really is. In other words, everything's just a model, just a model. And we do the best we can, but we still have the ability to be awed by what we see. Okay. Let's handle it with humility.
And maybe $100 million down the road, we'll understand even
more. We'll know
more.
A little bit more, hopefully.
Okay, what closing thought would you have?
Well, I like the idea that the brain is able to remember things. Some drastic events in our life, tragedies, plug themselves into our brains. We don't have to sit there and meditate it. We all have this experience. We can go back to childhood and remember things. Solomon wrote, he said, you know, before the light of the sun, the moon, the stars go dim to your old eyes, remember God. Remember God in your youth. So in the strength that God gives us when we're young, use that strength to honor God, remember him. And don't say, I'll think about God when I'm on my deathbed. I would advise, put yourself on your deathbed today. Picture yourself there. What are the things which are important in life? Say you've got 2 hours left. Put yourself in that position. You can do this. You can put yourself in that position just in your mind. That's how powerful the mind is. You can transport yourself to a different state. Think about it and ask yourself those questions. What advice would you give to somebody in that position? And ask yourself those questions and come back to this. Remember your creator while you are young, before your spinal cord of life snaps and the bowl of your skull is broken and the water jar of your heart is smashed and your vena cava leak and your aorta is broken at the well, the heart. Remember God before those. It's going to happen. Billy Graham in his recent book talked about as we get older, our strength diminishes and we can't do the things we once could do. It takes a lot more ability to do that. But Paul writes, he says, the outer man is what, growing weaker, but the inner man day by day is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. There's a shift from the physical awareness more to a spiritual awareness. And we believe when this life is over that what we're experiencing now will be as a dream compared to eternity. This will just be a mist. It's not like that now. It's going to reverse.
So one lesson along that line would be, form habits that will work to your benefit rather than those that will be detrimental to you.
Believe what God has spoken in his Son and in his Word.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Dr. Charles Weber.
Thank you for inviting me.
We want to thank Dr. Charles L. Weber for sharing his knowledge with us. I personally have gained a deeper appreciation for the intricate engineering that God built into the various organs of our bodies. And I hope that you've also found these discussions interesting. If you'd like to contact us, email truthtest@truthinthetesttube.org. That's truthtest@truthinthetesttube.org. What's coming next time? Well, let us surprise you when you visit Truth in the Test Tube.